And I'm going to give you a short clip now from a Berkeley interview, which I ran into up there a couple of days ago. And a few more comments, then we're going to move into the flashback, which is jumping back to 1996 in March, during which time there was the beginning of an 8-month-long homeless vigil in front of City Hall. I'll talk a little about, but you'll be able to hear actual voices of the time discussing as well from 23 years ago. Okay, so it's about 12:30. I'm in Berkeley on what's the name of the street, you know?
I don't really know the name.
We're outside the food court next to Kingpin Donuts. I'm talking with
Michael.
And Michael, you're soliciting funds. How's it going?
Oh, but so far, I ain't got no complaint because God woke me up. But other than that, everyday life thing.
He didn't give you a ticket, I hope?
Nope.
What did he tell you? He gave you a cup of coffee, perhaps?
Nope. No, nothing.
Is this a frequent occurrence or did it just happen today?
It happened today with you.
You a longtime Berkeleyan, recent?
Raised and born right here in Berkeley.
And have things changed much since the days of your boyhood?
Yes. There's more homeless people, more drug addicts, more veterans need help.
And if looking at the last year or two, do you see anything that's stood out in your mind?
No. No.
How is the attitude of ordinary Berkeley people toward folks outside?
Well, I would say that it's improving. It's getting better. I mean, it's got to the point where I remember they wouldn't even acknowledge you. You know, at least they'll speak to you. You know, that means a lot. You know, have a nice day, you know. God bless you. I hope everything work out with you.
No money, no food.
No, none of that. No, none of that, sir.
So you've been here.
Shelters, no, nothing.
You've been sitting here with a sign for how long today?
Almost since 9 o'clock this morning.
And what's your take so far, if you want to say?
About $4.
That's a low take.
Yeah.
Is that standard, typical for the day, or do you think that's...
No, I usually make about $60 a day.
That's pretty good.
Out of how many hours?
But from 9 to maybe about 8 o'clock.
12 hours almost.
Yeah.
Looks like you want to get to work.
Yeah, I got to go back to work. So far, I only made $3.
What's your name, man? If you want to say.
Michael Harris.
Thank you, Michael. I'm Robert.
Robert, my pleasure.
Let me give you my... This is where you'll be on the radio.
Oh, okay.
Probably on Thursday.
Okay.
It's going to be radio in Santa Cruz, but that's...
That's okay.
You'll be famous in Santa Cruz.
I'll be up with
African-Americans. There's another guy sitting on the sidewalk near Johnson's Market. As I walk down... the street, his name I don't remember. Another guy. I would say he's African American too, leaning against the Bank of America. Dare I say, homeless looking. Yep. And if you wanted to catch the full interview with First They Came for the Homeless residents who are now facing demands, they either essentially disassemble their homes during the day and bake in the sun during the summer, or else face citations, fines, possible arrests, which is something First They Came for the Homeless has run into before on 16 or 17 different occasions. I never get the number quite right. And they simply pack up, move their stuff to another place, and set the stuff down again. They had thought this was generally over, as you heard from the interview, if you followed it from Thursday. That's when the first part of the interview at Berkeley can be found on the Huff website, if you want to go back and listen to the Thursday show. But the hammer is coming down here in Santa Cruz and there in Berkeley. So now coming up for the last hour and a half or so, or a little bit less, actually, of the Bathrop Spears Broadsides show today, it's a March 15th, 1996 flashback to an early show, or actually part of an early show then. Some of these shows have been lost, and this is a segment from the show. We'll feature a look into 15 days into the City Hall sleepers vigil. In those days, it wasn't illegal to actually sit with a sign outside or even in the corridors outside City Hall, even in the wee hours of the morning, provided you didn't engage in any illegal behavior. Nowadays, of course, simply political protest of a peaceful kind at City Hall outside their regular office hours is a crime. It's considered to be being in a closed area after dark, and you can get not just a $100 to $200 citation. Not actually sure whether it might even be more these days. I got one of those, or a couple of those, actually. But you can also get an immediate stay-away order for 3 days, and that can extend to 3 weeks, 3 months, 180 days. If you get another infraction within a week in any other closed area. And closed areas are, of course, all the parks in town at night, the Poganip at night, and different parts of Pacific Avenue where the parks and rec rangers still roam, or along the levee. And so it's really a hazardous environment for homeless folks these days, much more so than then, at least in terms of the extent of the presumptuousness, the arrogance, and even say the tyranny of the law, which has not been effectively opposed by groups like the American Civil Liberties Union, though I think they've put in a few token efforts. Steve Plaich claims he will be helping people who will come forward with citations. And maybe, I don't know if he's actually going to accompany them to the so-called administrative hearings that you get when you go before the city manager. Why would you go before the city manager, who's the very person whose office colluded in the creation of these laws, and expect a fair hearing? Well, you aren't going to get a fair hearing, but they have to provide the semblance of a process, the appearance of justice. And that's what they're, of course, doing with the Ross Camp closing. That's why you initially have this cooked-up claim of a cleanup. I mean, I'm sure they're going to clean up the area. That's part of their deal. But they're going to clean it out at the same time. That's what the Ross Campers always feared, and they're preparing to resist that starting on Tuesday at 10 a.m. If you want to go out there and have a look, I'll probably be down at City Hall opposing the lawsuit, which is going to be heard in closed session. It'd probably be more effective if you go out to the camp, is my suggestion. I'll be going out there afterward. And then there's also, of course, on Tuesday, a formal vote from the city, though it's actually kind of pro forma, meaning it's just more of a courtesy or more of a form than any substance, because it's already been made clear that Justin Cummings is backing this closing of the Ross Camp. Previously he'd said, though he'd kind of wavered both ways, that there should be adequate shelter before that's done, and therefore he didn't want to set a firm closing date. Or one time he did, but then he took it back. Now he's taken it back again in his resolution, which he's put his name to. And of course, there are those who say that people should march to his house and protest there, and that's not necessarily a bad idea. Or contact him by email, jcummings@cityofsantacruz.org. cityofsantacruz.com. Don't make that mistake. I think the main thing is to support the Ross Camp community, either helping it to document its right to stay where it is until such time as there really is adequate shelter somewhere else. And then secondly, if not that, to help them, accompany them to another place where they will get some community support as they were getting before. Now, the city, as you've heard from this broadcast, has proposed San Lorenzo Park as a temporary relocation spot. This was still under the wording of the old resolution by the city council that there will be a temporary cleanup. And I've, of course, made it clear my view that what they're going to do is simply move people out and then advise people they can't come back and then disperse the temporary encampment in San Lorenzo Park. This could be wrong. They could let them stay there for longer, in which case it would be appropriate to defend the homeless in San Lorenzo Park. though, again, because this whole thing is being done under the guidance or pressure from, as well, the oversight of the city government, it's always a danger that the people who are relying on the government there will simply begin following their orders and abandon the more basic loyalty to the community group at the Ross camp. And I would say, you know, that there has been a community group developing, at least a kind of tolerance among folks who live there, an understanding of what's good to be there. There hasn't been a formal structure, and the Ross Camp Council is itself a collection of folks who are more active than others, but who haven't been given any official sanction by the Ross Camp, and that's true. Nor have they been denied by the Ross Camp, and that has to be said as well. And it's also a group that's open to all Ross campers if they want to join. And only a small number have, which some people say might, oh, well, then people aren't interested. The people really are busy out there doing their own lives and taking care of what they need to do. You can't even get, the city has not provided drinkable water out there. It has to be done by volunteers. Maybe in the San Lorenzo Park for a brief time, when people go there, if they are allowed to stay there for any length of time, which, as I said, is highly problematic. You know, I've repeated several times during this broadcast that they haven't gotten the community's sanction, meaning the same very anti-homeless aspect of the community that came and denounced the Depot Park. They've already passed, the city council has already passed a resolution saying you can't go into parks. That's not going to be a place where temporary encampments can go. And Susie O'Hara has responded to that question. I raised that point by saying, oh, it's an emergency. But there's no emergency finding happening at city council, although I guess they can try to do that, and they may drag along the so-called progressive wing, Crone, Brown, and Glover with them, and making it an emergency and thereby opening up the camp, at least for a short period of time in San Lorenzo Park, if they indeed go ahead with that and don't simply say, well, we're going to put some of you in the Boneyard on April 30th. That's 1220 River Street. Some of you have the option to go into the indoor shelters on 7th Avenue and Laurel Street. No more than 100, though. I mean, and also that means we'll probably be excluding people who are homeless outside the camp, of whom there are far more than are in the camp, as I've repeatedly pointed out. But you'll never find that in the stories of Jessica York. Or I don't think the contrast is never made clear. Or is, if it's been made clear, it is certainly not made clear at the time the discussions are happening at city council and that York is reporting on them. That's been my one of my beefs with York's reporting on this issue. Anyway, let me tell you what the flashback is going to be about. I hope you'll show up at these events that are happening here and don't just drown yourself in nostalgia. But if you want to get a sense that this is how things have been going for a long time in Santa Cruz, and that there have been protests rising up before, the 1996 protest was also taken to court, and the city lost. They wanted to make it harder for people to stay at City Hall during the night. People stayed at City Hall during the night, but the leaders of the protest made it clear that they were not going to sleep there because that would violate the law and they wanted to be legal. Now, many other people did sleep there, saying it's both constitutional, fair, moral, and sane for us to sleep at night, regardless of the city's ridiculous middle-class gentrification standards that homeless people don't have the right to sleep at night unless they can find money to buy their own property or rent their own space. Simple as that, which is ridiculous, abusive, but the prevalent attitude among elites across the state and across the country who are running the cities. During those days, it was legal, as I said, to be at City Hall during the night, provided you didn't fall asleep, which was a violation of the sleeping ban. Now, ironically, it's legal to fall asleep, but not at City Hall. And it's not legal to hold up a sign and stay awake at City Hall after 6 o'clock when the so-called grounds close. There's all these closure laws have been created, essentially anti-homeless curfews that have been set up throughout the city in order to criminalize not just homeless people, but all citizens, because they have to do that to appear to be fair. But it mainly targets protesters who are supporting homeless people's rights, and doing so in the obvious way that you would think you would do, which is go to City Hall, go to the county building, go to the center of government, and demand of those authorities that have imposed these repressive laws that they release them. Now, the federal courts have done that recently. They did that in September. They actually indicated they were going to do that as far back as 2015 with the Bell versus Boise case. And in response, the police department has moved to declare, oh, you see, we're going to be very fair about this and very legal. We're not going to give people tickets for sleeping outside or for camping because there's no place for them to go. But, of course, then what they do is they give them tickets for other things that are incidental to this, such as being on the sidewalk and supposedly blocking it. That's what killed the Freedom Sleepers protest eventually, such as being in the closed area, sleeping at City Hall, sleeping in any of the parks, sleeping in the Poganip. And I continue to repeat this because it is so obvious a dodge and so detrimental to the health and safety of homeless people, and also denies them any kind of sense of safety, particularly vulnerable homeless people. They have to hide from the police. They have to hide from those who would support them at Ross Camp. People know where to go to support homeless people when they are moved from Ross Camp, or if they have to disperse from Ross Camp, then they will, it will not necessarily be a place where they can be found. Now, you might say, well, what about San Lorenzo Park? Briefly, perhaps, if in fact that actually goes forward. But as I said, come early afternoon on Tuesday, April 23rd, when the city council takes this up and votes it, it votes in this proposal, which under the motions by Cummings and Watkins has no provision for moving to San Lorenzo Park. It's true that's what the city staff is planning, but that's certainly not going to be the favored place for people who are hostile to homeless folks and who were successful in stopping the city from using Depot Park, even for the more limited purposes of the dusk to dawn and then leave. This would be a 24-hour supposed encampment. It's exactly what they said they wouldn't do. So I don't think they're going to do it. And I think this whole thing is a charade that is being done because they say, well, that's what the law says now. And if it changes on Tuesday, well, then that'll be something else. We'll see if that happens. But there'll be those raising their voices and putting their bodies in place to deal with this issue, at least focusing their cameras on what's happening. March 15th, 1996, flashback. You're going to hear Patrick Lancelin, who is a video journalist of those days, on the community TV shenanigans of the whole of olden times with regarding the homeless. You're going to hear discussion of an old activist, D-Bob. Actually, he was a young activist, but he was a pepper spray victim, reportedly. Skidmark Bob, who now, ironically, guards the Loudon Nelson bathrooms from people's public use of them. They're still closed, but and he's joined the force there. He was a cop watcher in those days, and he stood up against authority a lot and sang about it on the streets with Phil Free. He gives a report on Officer Over's backpack seizures. And speaking of Phil Free, you'll hear his dialogue on this situation, conversations at the vigil, and some brief report from Crossroads' Chris Brozda before he committed suicide from jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge in despair and anger, talking about the deficiencies of the Homeless Community Resource Center, the precursor to the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Louis Santana will talk about an SCPD assault, and you'll hear a River Street Refugees update. That was the group of people who were at the River Street, or it was then called the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which was a place where people went and set up their tents back in 1995. Actually, they were there with their tents down during the day in 92, 93, and 94. It was called the Back 40, for those of you old-timers who remember. And they were driven away by the city government under threat of arrest, but they were given this sort of little kind of earlier, we're going to help you out by giving you places to stay out in New Brighton Beach for 2 weeks, which they did. And the Riverside refugees tried to stay longer. The city council initially passed a plan to try to fund that for a longer time, but The Take Back Santa Cruzers of their day fought it successfully, and the council was led by politicians who pander to that sort of thing, Mike Rotkin, Cynthia Matthews, Scott Kennedy. And you're going to hear that, and, well, that's the flashback. If you want to get in touch to discuss anything you've heard on the show, the phone number to call is 831-423-4833. That's the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, and Huff will be meeting next week, of course, after the fateful city council meeting on Tuesday. Perhaps we'll put the meeting out at the camp, depending, or the in the middle of the area that was the camp that the police are trying to rule as an area that is now out of bounds, and we'll see how that goes. Although the cleanup date, the exclusion date, according to the proposal by Cummings and Watkins, seems to be April 30th, which is in conflict with the notice to vacate abatement of public nuisance posting that they posted some days ago, which gives the date as April 23rd at 10 a.m. Tuesday. So it's enough to confuse anybody, and hopefully don't be confused. Support the Ross folks however you can, and keep your eyes on Santa Cruz Indie Media, Facebook Santa Cruz page on the issue of, or the section for Food Not Bombs, Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs, Take Back Santa Cruz from Take Back Santa Cruz, Facebook page. You might look up Alicia Kuhl, K-U-H-L, and her Santa Cruz County Homeless Advocates. A lot of places to go to keep in touch. If you want to be on the Huff email list, again, give me a call at 831-423-4833. Here comes the flashback. Thanks for listening.